Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors.
Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
All right, welcome to Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network or listening on demand at sportingjournalradio.com or subscribing and podcasting in iTunes. For the next hour, we're going to talk about the outdoors, hunting and fishing in Minnesota and, of course, Wisconsin and the Dakotas and our neighbors here in our part of the world. Hunting, fishing, we'll talk Lake of the Woods with Joe Henry. We'll actually talk hunting and fishing with Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods. We'll talk 14-pound walleyes with Joe Henry coming up later in the show. Jamie Dittman, well, I guess we're actually going to talk about Montana just a little bit this week, too, because Jamie Dittman from Brainerd has taken his trip out to Montana to chase elk for the third year in a row. The first year, he shot a cow. The second year, he had a mule deer tag, too, and he connected with a nice muley buck. And this year, did he finally get his bull? Well, we'll talk to a very happy Jamie Dittman later in the show and find out just how he did it when it was snowing and blowing 40 miles an hour in the mountains. Also, Tony Crotty will go in the truck with Tony Crotty from Mid-Migration Outfitters to get a waterfowl migration update. And right now I want to talk about the unofficial game bird of Minnesota, the rough grouse, because earlier this year everybody was jacked about the rough grouse season and how many birds are going to be out there and how good hunting has been. And I've actually been seeing quite a few pictures roll through my Facebook feed. I've talked to a number of guys who went out chasing grouse and had pretty good success. And then I was actually talking to Jamie the other day, who has shot a few grouse this year, actually. And he said, boy, did you see the story that came out today? I said, no, I didn't see anything about that. And they said, you know, biologists are trying to figure out why rough grouse hasn't been as good the hunting for roughs hasn't been as good as forecasted. And I said, geez, it seems like the hunting's been pretty good, but I guess I haven't been walking through the woods chasing them, so I don't know firsthand. But so I want to call the guy that would know the answer to this question, and that's Ted Dick with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. And Ted joins us now on the radio show. You're actually on the road right now, Ted. Is that right?
Yeah, hi, Brett. That's right. There's a woodcock symposium, something that only happens once every 5 or 10 years. I think it's been 10 years since the last one. But yeah, I'm in Roscommon, Michigan, in the Lower Peninsula. So 3 or 4 day meeting with some of the world's best minds concerned with woodcock research and management. So it's pretty interesting.
What are they saying about woodcock? Because I will say I've heard great reports about woodcock hunting so far, at least here in Minnesota.
Yeah, the hunting over here has been okay. It's been very good back in Minnesota. I love to hunt woodcock with my dog, and I started going out on September 23rd, the opening day, and I think we had over 60 flushes in about 2.5 hours that
wow.
First day out. It hasn't been as good as that since then, but in general, people are having a good time. You know, with a migratory bird like that, it's sort of like ducks. It can vary from day to day if they're moving around or moving through, but it's interesting to get up to date on the current things over here and talking to people back home. It sounds like the weather's changing there a little bit, but the hunting is still pretty good right now in late October.
Yeah, with this weather that moved through, some strong heavy winds, some snow and some rain, that'll probably push some birds out, right?
Yeah, you know, it probably will, but there's some fascinating research. Dr. David Kremens works at the Arkansas Co-op Unit. He's presented here, and he stopped in Minnesota, and we saw a presentation at the Pine Ridge Grouse Camp that he gave talking about this telemetry. And one of the most interesting things I thought is the mean date for our Minnesota resident woodcock to leave on their migration is November 3rd, which sort of shocked me. You know, a lot of people think those resident birds blow out with the first cold weather in early October, but the average date is until November. So that was one interesting factoid from that presentation, among others.
That is interesting. Do they do little GPS transmitters on woodcock? How do they do that? How do they figure that out?
Yep. That's it. Exactly. There's been a real expansion of our abilities to put GPS transmitters, satellite transmitters on small birds these days, you know, even on the golden wing warblers and things. They can make the weight small enough now that they can put them on tiny birds. And so you weren't able to do that up until the last 5 or 6 years with woodcock, but now they can put transmitters on them and track them all the way to their wintering grounds in Louisiana and then back. And the information they get is just fascinating. You know, they know how far they go in a typical day, and they know that they make fewer stops on the way south. They kind of bomb all the way down, but on the way north, they take shorter stops, and they can even back up if the weather gets bad, you know, just like we talk about with ducks sometimes if a storm's coming through. So it's really valuable information concerning how you do habitat management and what we know about woodcock.
Ted Dick is our guest here on Sporting Journal Radio. He's the Forest Game Bird Coordinator with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. And you work with the DNR, and you also do some work with Rough Grouse Society, or you're tied in with RGS as well?
Yeah, it's an unusual thing to have a state employee funded by an outside organization. But yeah, the Rough Grouse Society pays part of my salary, and so I help with their projects and their events, and then I also work on policy and habitat with the DNR. So it's a good job. It's just got more bosses than a typical job.
But sometimes that's not always an ideal situation, but I think RGS seems like they'd be a pretty nice organization to be working with. And let's talk about the rough grouse, because that's why I wanted to have you on. That's what everybody's talking about right now. The spring drumming counts were up. They were up how much this year?
I think in the heart of grouse range there, it was up 57% over last year, which is the largest year-over-year increase that I've found looking back at the 68 years worth of records, at least in the last 40 years. That's a big jump.
Are you hearing from people then that the hunting isn't as good as they thought it would be?
Part of the reason I'm in Michigan is not just to attend this, but I'm also in the witness protection program. Because I am getting calls and emails from people saying, the DNR lied to us again. What are you talking about? Sort of thing. But I did play it up, and admittedly, I was overly optimistic, and I take the blame for that. But when you have an increase, that usually correlates pretty well with increased hunter success in the fall, and not always. We always talk about recruitment of the young birds. If you have good recruitment in a low drumming year, you can have pretty good hunting in the fall. But the converse is also true, that if you don't have good recruitment, even if the drumming trends were up, it can still lead to mediocre hunting in the fall. And that's kind of what happens. If you look at the results from the RGS National Hunt, where they register the age and sex every bird that gets shot, so it's a great comparison over the last 36 years, the overall harvest was down 30% from last year, and the recruitment of young individuals, the ratio of young to adult females, was also down substantially and well under the long-term average. So it's disappointing. It's not out of the range of variation. You know, these things happen. But as to a cause, I see some headlines that say, you know, grouse biologist DNR doesn't know what happened. Well, we never know exactly unless you're doing the research, but we're speculating that it was weather events or something that affected the survival of the young birds that caused it to be much less enjoyable hunting than we had predicted. So
Ted Dick is our guest here, Sporting Journal Radio, talking rough grouse. And I had Jared Wicklund from Pheasants Forever on a couple of weeks ago, and we had a similar conversation, because this spring we were seeing pheasants all over the place here in western and southwestern Minnesota, and we were pretty excited. We figured it was going to be a good year. It was a decent winter. Not that we're gaining habitat necessarily, but it seemed like the decrease was slowing, and there was demand for more habitat, more CRP now. So maybe things were on the upswing. Things were looking good for us. And then we come to this fall, and there's just not as many pheasants out there as we thought there was going to be. And he blames it on weather. And he says in particular, there was a hailstorm in June that could have, just the timing could have been perfect and wiped out some young birds. And do you think then that maybe even that one in June could have been a factor?
You know, the lack of grouse across the entire range, it seems to be kind of widespread. You know, some of those weather events are typically more localized. I live in Cohasset, just outside of Grand Rapids, and I remember times in June I pay attention to the weather there, just because I know these questions will come up later. And there were some 5 or 6 inch rains that hit Hill City and just south of there that didn't hit me 12 miles north. So they were kind of isolated. And, you know, I look at the wild rice as another natural phenomenon that kind of depends a lot on weather. If you get big rain events in June, it sort of wrecks the rice crop, and we like to do that. And we saw good coverage. You know, the weather was okay for that. So there weren't big enough rain events to mess up the wild rice. And other parts of the state, you know, the Northwest, the guys up there, they talk about what a drought they were having in early June. And usually with the wet weather, the precipitation, you also look at the cold, and it definitely wasn't cold around Grand Rapids. I checked the records, and our temperatures in June were at least average, if not a little above. And we didn't have the big rain events, although they did in places south of us. But so it's most likely the explanation, but I don't know that we have the data to support that. But it seems like when you have this kind of decrease, you blame it on the weather. That's typically
sure. Well, and nobody likes to talk about predation, but I'm sure there's a few more predators roaming those woods these days, and I don't know if there'd be enough to make that big of an impact or not, but I'm sure it played a part.
I talked to John Urban, our fur bearer people, and we talk about that a lot. And to me, the thing with rough grouse in the woods, everything likes to eat rough grouse, not just humans. So they always, you know, they're always subject to a lot of predation, and they're reproductive strategies where they have a lot of eggs and you get low survival till the next year. You know, anything can, you know, even deer have been shown on cameras to eat avian eggs off the ground. And so between skunks and raccoons and all the other fur bears, it's hard for me to believe in one year that we could go from such high drumming counts to such low recruitment numbers in the fall, blaming that just on a change in predation. It seems to me that that's always been there, and you're right, it has changed over the last few years. Some fur bearer populations have gone up, but others have gone down.
One in particular. So,
yeah, well.
We don't need to get into that argument, though. Yeah. But Ted Dick is our guest here, Sporting Journal Radio. I, you know, hopefully now with the leaves coming off, maybe hunting will get a little bit better. People will start seeing a few more birds. And until then, let's teach rough grouse to start building nests in pine trees somewhere or, you know, up off the ground, maybe.
Well, you know, speaking of that, the biggest call, and I'll just mention it briefly, and you can edit this out if you don't have time, but turkeys. I get more calls from people saying the reason there are fewer rough grouse around is because the turkeys are eating them all. And if we haven't mentioned that before, I just want to say that that's more of a sign of changes in the overall age of the forest. Turkeys generally do better in older, more mature forests with a more open understory. And I'm happy to talk to anybody about it anytime if they want to give me a call, but even though you're seeing some more turkeys now than you did 20 years ago, that doesn't mean that they're the cause of your poorer grouse hunting success.
So. Interesting. I guess I hadn't heard that correlation before, but that turkey population has definitely exploded. Well, Ted Dick, enjoy your time in Michigan, and thanks for the time here on Sporting Journal Radio.
All right. Thanks, Brad. Good to talk to you. Appreciate it.
All right, coming up, Jamie Dittman recaps his trip to Montana, his successful trip to Montana. How did he do? How did he do it? We'll find out. Plus, Joe Henry's got a Lake of the Woods fishing and hunting report. We'll talk 14-pound walleyes from Lake of the Woods in the Rainy River. Yeah, you want to hear about this. And then also, we got Tony Crotty. We'll go in the truck and get an update on the waterfowl migration next on Sporting Journal Radio.
Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Time to go in the truck with Tony Crotty from Mid-Migration Outfitters here on Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson, and Tony, we finally had a big weather push that we kind of wanted to have it. It's just not as much fun hunting while it's happening.
Right, right. Yeah, we got a bunch of big wind, and we're going to be getting some precipitation over the next couple days here. So it's going to make for some pretty interesting hunting conditions, but we'll be out there, and it'll be fun.
Yeah, some guys really love hunting in that stuff because you can have some good hunts when the weather is like that. But some days it's like, why are we out here right now?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, you know. I was telling you about that this morning. I've been getting messages from guys asking if we're going to be out hunting in the storm, and I think they're kind of crazy. I mean, we'll be out in it, but it's not my favorite type of weather. I like 10-mile-an-hour northwest winds and blue skies personally, but it can be good hunting, and like I said, we'll be out in it, and hopefully all goes well.
You were seeing one field load up. You said there was a couple thousand geese feeding in this one field alone?
Yeah, the past couple of days, there's one field that they've been loading into, and we got our first push of little geese in, so a lot of times that's what they'll do. They're like snow geese, they'll come off high, and they'll all go to the same place, so I'm assuming that's what was in there.
Little geese are fun to hunt, aren't they?
They're fun to shoot. Hunting them can be a pain in the butt, but it can be really rewarding when you can get into them.
In the truck with Tony Crotty from Mid-Migration Outfitters. It's been a busy week, Tony. We had clients just about every day in the last week or so.
Yeah, it's been real busy for us. We've been going strong, and I feel like you and the other guides have been in the field just about daily, and I've been driving around in the truck about daily, but it's not going to slow down anytime soon.
That's an important part about it. We talk about the importance of scouting every week. And, you know, when some people say, they get to go sit out in the field and you get to sit in a truck all day. And, well, there is definitely some times where I'm a little jealous that you're just sitting in the truck when we're out in the field. But that's just as an important part of this as being in the field, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, especially if hunting is slow, if birds aren't cooperating, you know, we got to be constantly looking for the next best thing and a new place to set. And there's times where I'm jealous that you're sitting in the field. Yesterday was the first time I got to pull the trigger in over a week, so it was nice for me to get out into the field and join you guys. And so, yeah, both things are absolutely needed. It's just different aspects of the game.
Boy, you can tell times are changing. There's blue jays sitting in all the trees around us right now as we record this. We got ducks and geese buzzing around the area, and we actually shot our first widgeon this week and our first gadwall this week too. We started seeing some different ducks.
Yeah, a lot of new birds and a lot of different species of birds have been pushing in, and now we're not just shooting wood ducks and teal and mallards. Like you say, we're shooting other puddlers, and we've had just all sorts of crazy mix of divers coming the area. We shot, you know, ringbills and canvasbacks and all sorts of stuff the past couple of days, so it's been really good.
We smacked those ringbills the other day. That was a fun hunt.
Yeah, that was a really fun hunt, and it was one of them hunts where when they start coming in the morning, you don't know which one to shoot at or which flock, and it was a fun time in the blind with clients.
That's right. We had some first-time duck hunters, and, you know, one of those clients that morning, that was the first time he's ever hunted ducks, and it was on a crazy diver hunt like that.
Yeah, it's kind of an oddball way to start your waterfowling career. Most people don't shoot diving ducks that way. Usually they kind of open up on wood ducks or mallards or whatever it may be. But no, it was fun, and it was a good way to get them introduced to the sport.
Shooting divers is definitely different than shooting like woodies or teal or something like that because of the way they come in and work a diver line. And then tell us what you like to do, because you almost like to call the shot early on those birds.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of times, you know, your puddle ducks are going to come in and they're going to kind of hang up and drop down from above and float down into the decoys. As to where divers, they're going to wing out over the water real low. A lot of times you'll actually lose them in the landscape. They're so low. And then they'll be coming right at you, right down a diver line or whatever you're running. And what we like to do is we actually call the shot when they're about 40 yards out. Because then by the time that first shot goes off and them guns are shouldered, they're going to bank up and away. Diving ducks don't like to fly over land when they're low, so they're going to, instead of you know, flying straight at you, they're going to go straight up, and that makes for an easier shot.
We're in the truck with Tony Crotty from Mid-Migration Outfitters here on Sporting Journal Radio. Tony, the farmers have been busy lately.
Yeah, combines have been going like crazy, and you know, we stay in contact with a lot of the local farmers around here, and they've been burning both ends, you know, and especially when they're talking snow and more precipitation, which we don't need here in western Minnesota. They're going, trying to get everything off, and it's a great time of year for us.
Yeah, we've seen some combines getting stuck. We've seen a combine tipped over. We saw there's been some combine fires. So it's been a grind for them, I guess, out there in the fields. And there's been some tough times too. But boy, they are going nonstop right now. And they started on those beans, and it seems like, you know, you hit the beans and then you hit the corn. But it's almost like there's guys pulling beans and corn off everywhere right now.
Yeah, it's anything and everything, whatever they can get to. A lot of them guys that are, you know, they'll be pulling beans still. It's because they were too wet a week ago or whatever it may be. But, you know, sometimes there's a gap. They'll be doing beans, and they'll take a week to get stuff cleaned up and, you know, maintenance done. And right now they're switching them heads as fast as they can and getting right into the corn, and I don't blame them.
Yeah, that's right. Every once in a while, though, you see a little patch of corn still standing, and you just wonder how much water and mallards are inside that, because that's been the nice thing here the last couple of years. We've been able to hunt mallards and flooded corn.
Yeah, that's just it. And nice part now that it's coming out, and when they leave that standing corn, it's kind of an easy beacon for us to find. Whether or not there's ducks going into there is a different story, but it makes things a little easier and should get good even more.
Those are fun hunts, and now that the corn is coming off, we got a lot of landing areas for some of these Canada geese that are in the area.
Yeah, that's just it. You know, it was kind of concerning for a while there, because when you start getting migrating birds coming into the area and they don't have anywhere to eat, they're not going to stick around. Well, now we got plenty of food out for them. There's a lot of cornfields down, so the ones, new birds that we get should stick around, and hopefully we'll have a lot push in.
Yeah, that's the plan. Get them staged up at Lac Parle there, and then hunt them around the lake here in western Minnesota. We're in the truck with Tony Crotty from Mid-Migration Outfitters. And, man, we are in the thick of it right now, staying busy and running clients. The hunting is really good. And, Tony, there's some openings if people want to come out and hunt with us.
Yeah, we do have openings available. And, yeah, we are in the thick of it, and it'll be over here before we know it. So if people want to get out and they want to hunt and they need to get a hold of us, sooner the better. So on the website, or give us a phone call, and we'll get them set up.
All right, midmigrationoutfitters.com is the website. Tony, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks for having me.
All right, coming up, Joe Henry. We'll talk Lake of the Woods. We'll get a fishing report. We've also got Jamie Dittman, fresh off his third trip to Montana chasing elk 3 years in a row. He's pulled the trigger each year. Did he finally get one with something with something on top of the head? We'll find out coming up later in the show here on Sporting Journal Radio.
Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
You are listening to Sporting Journal Radio across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, podcastable in your iTunes and subscribable there or on demand at sportingjournalradio.com. Over the Governor's Fishing Opener, I spent some time in the St. Cloud area, and I actually fished with Steve Pinaz from Lake Commandos. Well, that is Joe Henry's kind of home away from home when he's not up at Lake of the Woods. And Joe joins us now on the radio show. And Joe, you just fished with Steve Pinaz up on Lake of the Woods. Is that right?
Sure did, Brett. And I'll tell you, what a great guy, man. He, you know, Steve, I don't know if you know his background or not, but, you know, he's a Hall of Fame angler and has been around the fishing industry for about 30 years, has a communicator, has done a lot of TV shows, used to be part of a North American fisherman, I believe it was, where he had Not Wars, and just really a neat guy in the fishing industry and also a really cool guy. But, you know, his show, Lake Commandos, it's kind of a cool show. The mantra is man versus fish versus man. So what you do is you go out for 2 hours and one person gets to pick a technique for 2 hours and have control of the boat. So you fish for that 2 hours and you see how you do. Then the next person gets control of the boat and fishes a different technique for 2 hours. And then you decide which technique worked the best based on how fishing was when you did that technique. And then you gravitate for the last 2 hours to that technique. And when Steve was up to Lake of the Woods this past week, I jigged. Of course, I went traditional, and he wanted to do something different. So he did three-way rigs with crankbaits, and it was pretty cool. We actually caught nice fish doing both. And, you know, I was a little disappointed. We didn't catch any monster fish doing the show, but we caught a ton of walleyes and saugers. I mean, that south end of the lake is absolutely loaded up with fish, and It obviously bodes well for first ice because that's where the fish houses go, and it's going to be good. So we did the south end, Brett, with myself, and then we had Steve up to the northwest angle, and he actually fished with a longtime northwest angle guide up there by the name of Dan Schmidt. And up there they targeted walleyes and muskies, northerns and muskies for a while. And yeah, my understanding is in 4 hours, they got a couple nice muskies on the Minnesota side.
Wow.
And then they fished for walleyes and did really well catching walleyes as well. So successful trip all around.
You know, Joe Henry, our guest, Lake of the Woods here on Sporting Journal Radio. Just going back to Steve for a minute, you know, spending a couple hours in the boat with him. I've talked to Steve before. I've had him on the radio show a couple of times. But I'll tell you what, when you get to actually sit in the boat and fish with him, you learn things. And it's he probably gets so sick of people asking him questions because you just want to pick his brain. And especially in our world, Joe, where not only do we like to fish and learn about fishing, but a guy that's been in the industry side of things for so long, whether it's, TV or promotion or whatever. So Steve, what do you think about this? Hey, yep. Steve, what do you think about this? When did you start doing this? It was just interesting. I mean, just a wealth of knowledge about fishing and the fishing industry with that guy.
Yeah, he's very gracious, very nice guy. And, you know, the old saying is, people don't care what you know until they know how much you care. And he's a guy that does care. I mean, he really is out to educate anglers and make it a good show about educating people on how to fish better. And that was part of it. You know, just to your point, Brett, watching Steve not only break apart the water, but pay attention to the different details and then not being afraid to switch techniques, switch lures, switch colors, switch wobbles, try different things, different nuances that might help him in that situation. It was really fun to kind of watch him do that. He's a very, very, very talented guy.
Yeah, he had about 10 or 11 different presentations out in the water by the time I had my second one. So he's always changing things up. And and you're right, he is a nice guy too. And it was fun to spend some time with him. So, and the Lake Commandos, what a cool concept for a TV show to pit two anglers together on some water and try out some different ways to catch fish and see how it goes.
That's going to, it is cool. It's going to air on the Sportsman's Channel, I think quarter one and quarter two, and I think the World Fishing Network, quarter three and quarter four of next year. So, you know, it'll be fun. It'll also be fun to get Lake of the Woods out there to, a group of people around the United States that maybe don't know so much about Lake of the Woods, and certainly that's part of it as well. So it was good.
Well, one of the things you know about Lake of the Woods is big walleyes, especially in the spring and fall, any time of year, really. But this is a great time of year to go up there. And I was following the Lake of the Woods Facebook page the other day, Joe, and I saw a pretty big fish posted on there.
Yeah, what's Hill saying? Even a blind hog gets a piece of corn once in a while. No, you know, I was out fishing the Rainy River this past week, and I'll tell you what, man, we didn't catch a ton of fish. I'll tell you, we caught a lot of fish on one day that were around that 13-inch mark. I wasn't real impressed. You know, those walleyes this time of year, Brett, they go through in waves, and the Emerald Shiners were running hot and heavy, and probably 2 weeks ago, you know, for about 4 weeks straight, the emeralds are running, the walleyes are running. Great fish on the river. And all of a sudden, the emeralds weren't running so great, and the walleyes, consequently, weren't real heavy in the river. You weren't getting huge, huge numbers of them. Well, interestingly enough, we found the same thing. We were jigging walleyes and just caught a few fish, whatever. Well, then we did, I will say this, I was fishing with Greg Jones of Midwest Outdoors, and, you know, Greg caught probably a 45-inch sturgeon, and then he whacked a 65-inch sturgeon that we actually got in on a walleye tackle. That was pretty good. And then, my gosh, at the end of the day, if I didn't get a good one on, and man, when I first hooked it, I thought it might be a sturgeon because it was the way it was swimming in the current and staying down, you know, and boy, all of a sudden I got it probably 4 feet below the surface, and I saw that white tip in that tail and those big eyes, about the size of $0.50. And tell you what, we got poised to get, you know, that net and got that head up, and we scooped it, and it was man, it was a big fish. It was a little over 30 inches, and it was just a huge girth. I mean, I'm guessing 11 to 12 pounds. Don't know. I didn't weigh it. We got that fish back right away, but big walleye. And I'll tell you what, man, we've heard of some other ones. I just saw a picture. Somebody got a 14.1 pounder yesterday.
Whoa.
There's been a lot of 29s and 30s being coming out of the river. And, you know, normally this time of year, what happens is, as the water cools and as the days get shorter, the larger emerald shiners will make their way up the river. And oftentimes that's when we see the big walleyes coming up too. You know, oftentimes when guys and gals are sitting in tree stands deer hunting, that first couple weeks of November, there's a lot of big walleyes in that Rainy River.
Man, that time of the year, during the deer season, is such a good time to do so many other things, and so many people are deer hunting. And actually, I won't hold that against them. They want to go deer hunt. That's great, because that puts less pressure for anybody else that wants to do some of these other things, whether it's, you know, waterfowl hunting can be some of the best of the year during the gun season, during the deer season, and of course, fishing, pheasant hunting, grouse hunting, whatever. So they want to go deer hunt, and I'll deer hunt too. I just generally try to bow hunt, you know, throughout the fall. So you let me go chase my ducks and geese and catch some walleyes, you can go have your whitetails.
Yeah. You know, it is funny because I'll be out deer hunting as well, you know, and at the same time, I can tell you, I know you love your ducks. You know, I know up in the Northwest Angle this past week, there was a huge raft of divers or bluebills. And
nice.
The raft was so huge that one of the guys driving by in a boat at first glance thought it was an island. And, they set up the next morning and whacked them pretty good. And those birds, you know, as we get some colder weather moving in, those birds are going to get pushed down. And, you know, the Lake of the Woods, we had that the local birds initially. And then it kind of gets thin. You know, some of the birds go south and those northerns haven't come down yet. And, boy, we get this first blast of cold weather. And a lot of times that'll push those divers down. And, man, that could be some good hunting.
Well, that wind and weather and, you know, some of the stuff that we had the past few days, this last week here, definitely moved some birds. And we saw some more. In fact, we saw some divers, too, where I'm at in western Minnesota there. And let's see, what day was it? We took clients out on Wednesday morning and had a huge ringbill shoot. We shot mostly ringbills and one mallard. And one canvasback. I think the rest were ringers. And I think we shot 28 ducks or something like that.
Wow.
So it was a
nice hunting.
It was a great morning. So it's that time of year, whether you're going to chase ducks and geese, pheasants, grouse, deer, or of course, go fishing. Lake of the Woods is a great place to do. You could do all of that. Maybe not pheasants, but you got everything else up there. And Joe, I know it's, you know, especially once we start seeing snow around the area, we start talking about these colder temperatures. Ice fishing's right around the corner, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, and you know, for us, we normally start getting fish houses out right around mid-December. So obviously depending upon the ice conditions, but you know, we do get an early start on it because we're so far north. And, you know, normally that first fishing is really, really good. You know, we get out there and, right now those walleyes are staged along the shorelines, both on the south end up at the Northwest Angle. And, it's good. I mean, it's real good. And then, you know, of course the year continues on and those fish have different patterns and the resorts stay on them with their fish houses and it's all good. We're excited for the ice fishing year. We see the fishery's healthy. We have so many walleyes and saugers of all different sizes. And I can tell you this last week when I was on the water with Steve, man, I bet we caught 70 or 75 fish in a 4-hour span. And, you know, we had to sort through them. We had a lot of small fish, but holy smokes, did we have action. And we did get our keepers. I mean, it was just a matter of sorting through.
Sure. Well, Joe, if people want to get their ice fishing trip booked or even come up there yet this fall, where do they find out more information about Lake of the Woods?
Yeah, check out our website, and that address is Lake of the Woods MN for Minnesota, Lake of the Woods MN.com.
All right, Jamie Dittman will join us next. He went over for his third trip, his third year in a row chasing elk in Montana. He shot a cow, then he shot a muley. How did he do this year? Well, we've got a very excited Jamie Dittman next on Sporting Journal Radio.
Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskie. Plus you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
This is the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Brett Amundson. All right, our next guest has gone to Montana for the last couple of years. He's been over there trying to shoot an elk. He had a good couple of first years, and this year, was this year even better? Was this the year that he gets his bull? Jamie Dittman joins us on the show. Jamie, how are things?
Pretty good. It was maybe a little better.
Maybe a little bit better. Well, let's start off. Let's back up. 3 years ago, you wanted to go elk hunting? Or when did you decide you wanted to go? Because I know you finally went 3 years ago, but when did you decide you wanted to go?
Well, it's always been, you know, a dream. That's been the animal that ever since I saw the first one on TV, I've never cared about moose or caribou or sheep. It's always been elk. Here in the Bugling, and then getting to hear it for real life, it was the one. And 3 years ago I went out and for a trip, which I told my wife was probably like a once in a lifetime deal because it's expensive. And I got a little addicted to elk hunting.
Once in a lifetime, or three times.
After I shot my cow, then she's like, well, yeah, because it was really good eating.
That first trip, was it more work than you expected or less?
It was about what I thought. You know, the guys taught me a lot, but I was wasting time. I was acting like a deer hunter.
Well, that's interesting you say that. So when you say you acted like a deer hunter, what's the difference? Where did you go wrong?
You know, deer hunting, if you sit and watch, or you go through the woods and you know, jump a deer up, where these elk, you know, I've seen a herd of elk smell me at 1,000 yards and just walk away and they're gone.
I've smelled you at 1,000 yards, Jamie.
When I was coming home, I smelled more like an elk than an elk.
Okay, so if you saw one smell you at 1,000 yards, how did you change your strategy then?
It's all about wind. You know, the wind goes up in the morning, down at night, down the mountains, and go around everything with the wind and come into everything with the wind in your face. If you walk by a stretch of woods with downwind a mile, I mean, that woods is shot by the time you get to it.
Jamie Dittman, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking about his trips to Montana to shoot an elk. So that first year, you shoot a cow. The second year, you get your elk tag, but you also got a deer tag as well?
Yep, mule. I bought the combo tag every year. Second year, I went out and I got on some bulls, I got on some bugling, and I just didn't make it happen. And I left the area that I was at to go maybe shoot a cow elk because I thought it might be a little easier. And that was the last time I'm not sticking to a plan. And I did go out and shoot a nice mule deer, and it's my first mule deer 4x4, and I was very happy with that.
I mean, why? What happened that made you upset that you changed your plan?
You know, I went to go try for a cow or any elk in a different zone, because where I mainly go is brow time bull only. That way you have to shoot a big bull. I went to somewhere easier to get in with vehicles, and there was more people, and we ended up coming home with nothing. So I should have never changed my plan.
I know that first year you were like trying to get exercise and getting in better shape. I'm like, who is this guy?
Right.
Did you get
when you see me walking around exercising, there's something up.
Right. Did you try to do a little exercising before this year's trip, or did you just go?
Yep. I made a lot of trips, you know, with my pack on, walking through the woods and stuff, you know, just a few miles a night, 5 miles, whatever it was. And just to get used to it, you know, you're not used to the altitude yet or the hills, but at least you got a little more muscle where you need it.
Sure. So you got in shape, you got your gear. Did you pack differently?
Every year I bring a little less, a little higher end stuff. Now I'm pretty much, you know, hooked on Sitka gear, kind of trek boots, things that the locals have out there. There's a reason they all use them. Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, a little bit of first aid kit, a little bit of lightweight food, and everything's about weight, just ounces.
And you went to a spot that you've been to before?
Yep, I went to my original spot where I got on bulls last year. I drove out on Thursday. I got into town and I stayed in a hotel, get a good night's sleep before I headed up. And Friday morning I headed up to the mountain. Got to the top, set up my truck with my new topper lift for set up base camp, you know.
Yeah, because you camped right in the back of your truck.
Yep.
And you could you actually almost stand up in that thing?
Almost. Your head's bent a little bit, but you can almost stand. You can stand up.
Wow.
The only thing I should have done with 50-mile-an-hour winds every day was to have jacks on the back so it wasn't so bolt-like in there.
Mm. Sure.
And I found some elk, went out scouting, and I found a couple good ravines where it looked like they had been traveling through. And so that was my plan, to go back there in the morning.
Okay.
So about 4:30, I headed out, and I got to my, I heard bugling on the way out, and I didn't deter me. I stayed going where I was going. I didn't bother cutting off to try to chase that other herd.
Really? And, See, that would have been tough for me. Because if
I said, this is the plan. I'm not changing from the plan.
Because, you know, and it's good to have a plan. And I'm one of those guys that likes to stick with it, too. But when you hunt, you have to be, there's so many times you have to be flexible and kind of take what Mother Nature throws at you. So if I'd have been walking out that morning and I heard some bugling, what made you say, I'm going to keep going?
They were a mile from where I parked, and I knew that every hunter that was out there would be going towards those elk.
Okay, and how many more miles were you planning on going out?
Four.
Four, okay, so you had four more miles to go. You wanted to get away from people, maybe find some animals that were less pressured.
Yep, the further you go, the better your odds.
So you say, nope, I don't care about you. I got four more miles to walk.
Yep, I'm here to hike.
All right, so you keep going.
Yep, and get out, and it's pretty, you know, hiking that far, pretty warm, so I'm down to basically my base layer, and get out to where I'm going, and the wind's blowing pretty good and snowing a little bit yet, and got my outer layers on and put my hood up, put my gloves on, and burrowed in and waited for daylight.
Okay, now this is your first day, right?
Yep, first morning, so I waited about 45 minutes before you shoot legal shooting time. And it was cloudy, so it was still kind of dark. And about half hour after shooting time, through the ravine, a cow poked her head out. I'm like, this is good. So I ranged where she was.
Now let me back you up 1 second real quick, Jamie. You're walking out 5 miles in the dark. Did you have some sort of GPS that you were following?
Yep, I have a GPS and I have it on my phone.
Okay, and your phone?
But you kind of get used to the trail. I mean, I've walked that trail enough times.
Okay, there's a bit of a trail to follow. All right, yep. All right, go back. You saw this cow.
Yep, and so you know, hoping there was more. And then another cow came out, and then a spike, and I'm just watching the spike to make sure it didn't have a brow tine, because it just has to have a legal brow tine is all I needed. And then I looking around, make sure there's nothing else around. I look back, and the herd popped in the valley. So I had a huge 6x6 with 20 cows around it. Hmm. And I seen another legal rack in the herd, and I watched the 6x6 for probably 5 or 10 seconds, and the cows were just not going to give me a shot. I could have hit the bull, but chances are I would have hit a cow too.
How far away do you think these elk were?
They were about 275, right around there.
Okay.
that's where I range the call.
So you got this giant elk 275 yards away, but he's surrounded by cow elk and you don't want any collateral damage. So you decide.
Yeah, you never know, you know, you think you got a perfect shot, but you could go through it and hit another call. And then what do you do?
Right. Okay. So you see the smaller one.
So the smaller one takes the step away from the cows and gave me a shot, just kind of quartering to me and shot. And he got down on, kind of dropped down and started to get up and shot again. And it took a couple steps and dropped over the hill.
And you got your bull elk.
And got my bull elk. I think.
You think?
So, you know, I couldn't see. So I grabbed my pack and I go around downwind and come over the hill the other way and it's tried to lift its head up. So I finished it off there.
Okay.
And, then she got pretty, I don't know, amazing. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. 3 years in the making, you finally get your bull and you set out. You did it on your own, hiking 5 miles in the dark into the mountains by yourself. And then the work begins.
Yep. And then got some pictures. And so now it's 8:30. By about 11:30, I had it quartered and in bags, which was no easy feat trying to maneuver an elk around to get the quarters off of it and get the hide off and cut the horns off. It was it would have been a pretty cool video.
Yeah, I bet. And then you actually hauled it out on a contraption that you built yourself.
Yep, I built a cart with a fat tire bicycle wheel. And the problem was that was 5 miles back at the truck. So I hiked out to get my frame pack and the cart. And eat a bunch of protein bars and hiked back in, got half the elk loaded up, some on the cart, some on my pack, and got in about 6:30 that night and tried to go to sleep.
So you shot the elk at 8:30. You're back at camp with half the elk at 6:30 that night.
I had the other half in bags hanging in a tree. I go back out the next morning at 8:30 and I got in about 1:30 with the last half and just thankful to be done.
I bet. That's no easy task, packing out a bull elk by yourself. But, man, 3 years in the making. You do it on your first morning, on your third year heading out to Montana for elk. Congratulations, man, first of all.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
I was pretty emotional. I had to wait to call my wife till I got done crying. So,
well, I'll be ready for some elk burgers anytime. So
that's what everybody says. And you know what? I left you a package right out there, so you just run out and grab it.
Ah, thanks, man. Right here.
I thought about with a fork and a bottle of Lowry's and just seeing how much I could eat, so I didn't have to carry it in.
Yeah, well, you'll still be carrying it.
Yeah,
just in your different pack. All right. Well, Jamie, congratulations on the elk. I wanted to get a fishing report from you, but we ran out of time. So congratulations, and thanks for being on Sporting Journal Radio.
Thank you.
Also, my thanks to Ted Dick, talking rough grouse, Joe Henry with those big walleyes running right now on the Rainy River and on Lake of the Woods, and, of course, Tony Crowdy in the truck. Thank you for listening. Make sure you take some time to spend some time in the outdoors this week.
You've been listening to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors, on the Sporting Journal Radio Network. To listen to this show again, get the latest hunting and fishing news and more, visit sportingjournalradio.com.